I was going to take a totally different service this morning. Actually, I'd been over in another part of Victoria, and I'd thought of what I was going to talk about. And then yesterday, early in the afternoon, you know, I thought, oh, look, I better get started on what I was going to talk about. And then I thought, no, I usually don't do that. Well, I usually have it going on for weeks in my mind what I'm going to talk about. And then I thought, really, folk, times are serious for us in the sense of, we shouldn't look at it perhaps in the sense of serious in a negative sense, but to us, really, it could be negative for a time. We are entering into the very last period of time of Earth's history. And believe me, some of the things that are happening definitely point that way. More so than what we see sometimes recorded in the record. One time, there is a few points in the record which needed some explanation, which would be interesting from a prophetic point of view, but we're not being told enough, I don't believe. But unfortunately today, when I was very pleasantly surprised by two articles in this, your own bulletin. That one about Trump, that one. I'll talk a bit about that one. And this European alliance. Now, we need to see some of these sorts of things in our publication so that we know what is going on. We have sometimes left in the dark, and I don't think the members of the church worldwide would be very pleased when there's some things very serious that they need to know about. I've entitled this, and it's a bit of tongue-in-cheek one in part of it. I've entitled this message today, The Four Last Day Beasts of Revelation. Now, there really are three, but I'm putting in a fourth one because the fourth one is one of the reasons why we're going to have the other three. And that's rather interesting. Okay, now, we take for granted that we know that we as a representative body of a church believe that in Revelation 14, verses 6 to 12 and 13, we have the picture of the three angels' message, which is supposed to be us as a church. All right, we accept that as a worldwide proclamation, the first message, living on the planets, those for everyone on the earth since 1844, speaking about a judgment to come, about glorifying God, fearing Him, etc., and the judgment not yet to come, but has already come, which is different to what you normally hear. And it brings us a reminder of Daniel chapter 7, 8 and 9, which I'll deal with later. And it's all about worship, that we were asked to call to worship the Creator. And it's a very significant point because that will be a key issue soon to come, very soon to come. And this, the three angels' messages, and I haven't taken you to Revelation 14 to read these out, but I think we know the first one virtually up by heart. And these happen before verses 14 to 18, which speak of the harvest, which is the, as it classifies right there in that passage, this is the end of the world. The harvest is the end of the world. This message is to be given, or these three messages are to be given before the end of the world or the harvest. Now, we hear a lot about the first angel's message. We hear a lot about it. We hear very little these days about the second angel's message. And we'll turn to that, Revelation 14, verse 8. We should know it off by heart, but and I'm not that particular as to which translation you use, because I like what John Carter said just a few weeks ago. He said, give me any Bible, and if I can't find the teachings that we believe in it, then there's something wrong. Okay. Revelation 14, verse 8. A second angel followed and said, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, which made all the nations drink the maddening wine of her adulteries. Slightly differently in the King James Version or the New King James, but it's basically saying the same thing. This second angel's message, and it gives us a bit of a clue to Revelation 17, and you'll find me perhaps jutting from one to the other. Unfortunately, I've got some pictures with me, so they might just spark a bit of a reminder of what I'm talking about, what Revelation 17 is about. It's about the prostitute riding on the beasts, and to note that she has daughters in Revelation 17. I'll go in and explain that a bit more. And this is very specific. It refers to the religious world's apostasy. But Babylon has already fallen, it speaks of here. And then if Babylon has already fallen, why does it say all of a sudden Babylon is fallen when it's already been fallen? Well, of course, if you understand what we believe, that is a specific message to what happened after approximately 1844 to Protestantism, a fall from grace. And this is a progressive fall. Now, do not, whatever you get in mind, do not get the idea when we say this that everybody in certain denominations are fallen, etc. That's not what the point is. It is speaking about its teachings and thinking that is taking place, and it's a progressive fall from what it was. Protestantism used to stand for something. It used to stand for something very definite. And we're seeing it falling away more and more from its roots. And when the Advent message, I'm talking about not the Seventh-day Adventist message, but the Advent message, the time of William Miller, in the 1830s and 40s, proclaimed that Christ was coming. Most of these denominations, there were many in some of these denominations who did believe that Christ was coming around that time. But when that event didn't happen, we found that a change started to take place in the thinking and philosophy and teaching of many of those churches in regard to prophecy. In fact, so many of the people who followed William Miller threw it all aside and walked into the world. And some of them walked into other churches, which is, I could understand that. But what has happened is that as a result of what happened after the 1844 things, and this has took a while, just didn't happen like that overnight, we find that in Protestant circles, instead of believing that the prophecies were seen as fulfilled in history, they then started to wander further and further away to different interpretations of prophecy, mainly two major ones. One is called preterism. Some of us know what that is. And then there's the futurism. And what preterism is about, and this is often held by the major Protestant churches, is that the prophecies of Revelation and the book of Daniel as such are mostly about the things that happen in the time of Christ or just after his time, in the time of the apostles. And that's where they stay. And they leave it at there. It's, unfortunately, there are a few in our own church organization who think this way also. I want to warn you about that. Some are in even high up places who think that. And I'll mention one or two names that you, later that you'll find rather interesting, have some of that same thinking. Then there's the other group, which make up the bulk of evangelical Protestants, especially in America. And this is important because when we talk about Revelation 13, we talk about America in the second part. In evangelical circles in Protestantism in America, a lot of the teachings of futurism have supplanted historic interpretation of prophecy. And so what they come to the book of Revelation, yes, we'll believe the first three chapters, that applies to the church. After that, it all applies to the future, and we don't have to worry about that because the church period is given to us in the time about the Apostle Paul and all the writings of the Apostle Paul. You see this in the Church of Christ, you see this among brethren, you see this of these basic teachings, and they've infiltrated so much of Protestant circles today. And it's taken them away from believing how Christ will come. If you believe in preterism, well, Christ's coming could be, you know, way into the future. You're not really having to look to worry about it, you know. It's way into the future. If you take futurism, you'll believe that one day, suddenly, unexpectedly, all the Christians of earth will be disappear from the earth, taken to heaven, And then there'll be the Jews will be the evangelist to convert the world. That comes from the book of Zechariah, etc. They interpret that. It's a rejection of the historic interpretation of prophecy, and both counts. And unfortunately, this is taking place too much in these organizations. The third angel's message, which I don't think you need to read too much, but reverse the 9 says, the third angel followed them and said in a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast and his image and receives his mark on the forehead or in the hand, he too will drink of the wine of God's fury, and so forth and so on. And we know that this has not yet happened, because as our servant of the Lord has said, no one has yet received the mark of the beast. And we know what that is about, false worship, wrong worship. Okay, I haven't dealt with any beast yet, have I? I've just given you an introduction. So we could put it, if we wanted to, on the board, and we could say here that the Advent message is being preached and it has the three messages together. And this is what God is saying, that you and I and so forth, I'll just put it down as a green line for the moment. Okay, what I'll put, 3. Okay, and I could put an M there, couldn't I? I don't want to write down message as well. I'll be taking too long. Then I might even get the spelling wrong, even though I was an English teacher. No, not really. I'm just joking. Okay, all right. Okay, now I want to deal with the first beast. And this one is a lot misunderstood and oftentimes not spoken about. But in 1969, just before he died, one of our very learned men, George McCready Price, wrote a book called The Time of the End. And he specifically emphasized about this beast and its influence in the world in which we live. Now, that was 1969, that's 1970, 30, 40, 46 years ago. You can say, oh, well, he must have been way off the point. But I want you not to think that way. It comes from the prophecy of a Revelation 11, and it's sometimes misunderstood as to how it applies. Revelation 11, which is about the two witnesses, and it is about a beast that comes out of the abyss. Let me see. I can't get the exact words from it. Yes. Now, verse 7. It goes into what it talks about and tells us what times it would be in power and all this. And he said, now they have finished their testimony. The beast that comes from the abyss will attack them and overpower them and kill them. Their bodies will lie on the street of the great city, which is called figuratively Sodom and Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified. For 3.5 days, men and every people, etc., etc. And what is this talking about? This is a prophecy concerning that what would happen just before Revelation chapter 13's first beast's important issue. This is about the French Revolution. And we know that the French Revolution, in effect, really lasted in fullness for 3.5 years. But its influence goes way, way beyond 3.5 years. In fact, it is so effectively dealt with its influence for the last 2 centuries that you and I take it for granted and don't even realize it's because of the French Revolution that we have this sort of issue. The historic background of 1789 to 1897, did that power cease? Yes, the French Revolution did finish, but because of its ideas and its influence, as a result, we have 1798, which you know that date quite well, but its influence caused so many ripples throughout Europe in particular. It caused the collapse of monarchies throughout Europe. It gave power to the people. Its ideas of power to the people or democracy came really from the American revolutionaries before the French Revolution started, because here was a nation that was based on not kings and priests or popes or prelates, but upon the will of the people, being the ones who determined the nation. And that came from America. It was incorporated in the French Revolution. They went berserk because they didn't know how to govern themselves. And ultimately that idea has become the focal point or the basic foundation of most Western societies and into Eastern societies today, whereby the people have a say as to who governs and how they govern, etc. And so you and I live in a democratic society. We are fortunate to have so, that where if we don't like the certain government in office, we vote them out. And if we do like them in, we keep them in. And that's great. When you had a king, you had to put up with him whether you liked it or not, and those who were close to the king, etc. But it also is led to the ideas that created the opposite effect, was communist states. And so you had, particularly the most virulent and perhaps most dangerous of those was in 1917, when you had the formation of communist Russia and communists, the Soviet Union. And here is the ideas again of the French Revolution, but instead of the power of the people governing, the people, yes, were important. We didn't have any kings, but we had a proletariat that were controlled by a group of people who had basically ideologies that were godless. And so you have this sort of thing. But the Western world, for example, ideals of our Western world are basically secular, humanistic. How could I put it? Something that we take for granted. They have some blessings, but they're actually godless. Actually godless. And when you weld these ideas with Darwinian evolution, which has happened, then you have the collapse of many religious powers, including Christianity today. The Christian church does not have the power that it once had 3 centuries ago, 4 centuries ago. Go back to Reformation, when church and state had control. Doesn't happen today. Well, not at the moment. Though, I'll talk a bit about what we see with Islam, and we certainly see the rise of that same idea, but certainly not from the French Revolution. And this is what has caused a greater collapse of Protestantism as a result of this power specifically mentioned in Revelation 11. And it causes the fall of Babylon. It defies God and he's called to worship the Creator. It dispenses with the judgment. It lives for this life alone mostly. And yet it is considered a very powerful force. And in some respects, we have got to be thankful that we are not ruled by a king or a prelate, but we have the freedom of choice to decide if we want to worship or not worship, which you didn't have in the past. When you go through it historically, you had to be either Lutheran or Presbyterian or Anglican, you name it, or Catholic, in so many of these places. But this allows you the choice. You could be anti-God. And one of its good things is that it gives you freedom of religion. That is that at the moment, that's basic point that we have, it has gives us advantage. Because we're not in favour of anti-God or a secular society totally. But it has caused so much of these freedoms that we have. And it's a freedom of belief that the First Amendment of the US Constitution has, the separation of church and state. And so many countries have accepted that. And that is because of this first beast that I mentioned. It is still in, it's as it were, alive and well today, except that it's coming to its end very soon. So I'll put here this, number one. All right, I'll just leave that at the present. I'll go into more of it today, later, I should say. Now, of course, we get to the second beast. Okay, now this is where we're on familiar ground, Revelation 13. Revelation 14 speaks of the three angels' message. Okay, that's okay. This power from Revelation 11 is very dominant in our societies today. Australia is basically a secular society. America clashes between religion and secularism. Europe is virtually secular. You can bet your life on that. Most Western countries are very secular and humanistic. Indeed. Okay. Now, Revelation 13, the first one, mentions a power that we're going to have to deal with. All God's people will. I saw a first beast coming out of the sea, and he had 10 horns and 7 heads and 10 crowns on his head, and a blasphemous name. I saw the beast resembled a leopard, but he had feet like those of a bear, a mouth like that of a lion. The dragon gave the beast his power and his throne and great authority. Well, that's the first two verses. Obviously, they're references to Daniel 7, the beast powers. Sometimes you could get a little bit of a hint from Daniel 8, but it's mostly Daniel 7 that this picture is. We know who that power is, and it's a very dominant, it was a very dominant religio-political power. This is, I hope I can use different colours. That's one. I've got four. I don't know how I'm going to fit them all on. And so we've got this power, and I'll put it Revelation 13. How will I put a 1 on that one? He's the first one mentioned there. Okay, you know which that one is. All right. Now, this beast will receive its power from the Satan, from the devil. And it's going to be very influential in the very last days, and we know what we're talking about here. Okay. We at the present live in a world of religious tolerance, do we not? Nobody comes here to check you out. Hey, what religion are you? What are you doing in here? You should be, and we'll make sure you go there, etc. We live in a world of religious tolerance at the moment. The only warning perhaps we have of seeing what it could be like is when we see Islam today. It's a warning to the Protestant Church, particularly in the United States. It's a warning to them of what happens when you have church and state united. You have religious intolerance. And all of a sudden we see in Indonesia, it seems like a bit of rumblings of this same thing happening in a very Islamic country who want to be peaceful. But there's these fanatics in it wanting to, because somebody has blasphemed. I mean, you can't even say anything about their God. I mean, I wonder Allah hasn't struck them dead and all the rest. But it's always got to take these murderous mobs to kill somebody to make sure that you don't blaspheme, if you know what I mean. Religious intolerance. But we see it in so many of the things that are happening in the Middle East and so forth, and ISIS and so on. This is what you get when you have religious intolerance. I saw perhaps a start of some inklings of this in the United States in the 70s and 80s. Not really, but a protest. It wasn't religious intolerance, but something that was developed as a result. I don't know whether any of you remember the events that in those times we had where secularism started to really come into the United States because of the result of the Vietnam War. And the secular society really started to come in that way. But at that time, people like Billy Graham were crusading against another power. They were crusading against communist USSR. That was the big bogeyman. He was the There was all evil coming from the USSR. That was the thing, the communist state. That was the evil thing. And they spoke about this a lot of times. They looked upon these enemies of their country, not from a biblical point of view, but they thought they were biblical, that these were the enemies of the country. It was the Soviet Union. Then, of course, it changed to being the enemy now has become, or became later, the secular society that was developing in America. We have it in so many ways. And I wanted to point out to you that this article here about Donald Trump pledges to support Catholicism in America, he is referring to some of the secular movements that have taken place in the United States, which we would largely agree with what he's saying in this regard. But this is the first beast I'm talking about here, so we don't get misunderstood here, about secularism and humanism being a problem. But this first beast goes beyond that. It says there, this first beast, verse 3, it says here, as you know so well, one of his heads of the beast seemed to have a fatal wound, but the fatal wound has been healed. The whole world was astonished and followed the beast. Men worshipped the dragon because he had given authority to the beast, and they also worshipped the beast and asked, who is like him, the beast, and who can make war with him, etc. Now, obviously, this takes us beyond the immediate circumstances of the present, and it goes back to 1798, when this beast received a wound that prevented it from doing what it wanted. Okay, and I'll give you a picture here. I'll see if I haven't got them necessarily in order. Okay, I'll just put these so you're reminded of that. That one, better give you a bit of white paper. That one's the three angels' messages. Okay, you can see that. Three angels flying in the midst of heaven. Okay, you're familiar with that one. Okay, that was one. All right. Well, I haven't got enough space. That's my biggest trouble. The next one, Revelation 17, I talk a bit more about this one. There's the wicked woman riding the beast. Very important prophecy. Very, very important prophecy. We'll talk about that. Okay. The top beast is the first one in Revelation 13. Okay, it seems very much like Daniel's picture. And this one receives this deadly wound. And it says, then the deadly wound would be healed. Now, let me say this. The deadly wound took away political power. It took away what this picture has here. That's the same organization, only now it's going to be more complicated. It's going to in the ultimate end, it's going to be all religious powers. But the picture Revelation 17 gives us is the woman is on the beast, but the beast is not doing what the woman wants. That is present day. That is what is happening today. The beast might want to persecute, might want to have its own way, but can't get the nations to do its bidding like they did before it had the deadly wound. But we know that it says the deadly wound was healed. When it says that, it means that it was able to do what it did before. The nations will do its bidding. That's very important, so that we keep that in mind. And we know what that power is. And we live in a time where this is going to happen, and there are more things happening than we perhaps also know about. But what happened in the past is the past. What is going to happen and is happening in the present is what we need to be interested in, what is happening. And mostly what is happening is a result of what this beast has created, the first one. Created a secular society. What is Donald Trump talking about? He's talking about the rise of LGBT group. He's talking about abortion. He's talking about trying to enforce people to serve people because they are gay, that they should be served if you don't want to serve them. That's what he's on about. Things like that. A lot of those issues. And not that I'm saying that we should be intolerant in that sort of sense, but when you're forced to do something that you believe you individually don't believe you should do, then you shouldn't be forced to do so, etc. That is because we have this. But this has come about because we have a secular society that's now advocating all sorts of things that are totally in violation of what God's commands are about. However, we still have separation of church and state. But that says there that this beast, will the dragon, will give all his power to this beast, and the people will worship it, all whose names are not written in the book of life. And we know what that's about. Okay. Now, there are a number of things that are happening today that we saw hints of in the 1980s and 1990s. This beast had a very prominent man. His name was John Paul II. Now, he influenced nations politically very definitely. And he was threw his hat in the ring, as it were, between the President of the United States and the USSR. And we know his influence of both the President of the United States and his influence in Poland caused the collapse of the USSR. That was his stated aim, to destroy the USSR. He achieved it. A very powerful man to do that. No other religious body had ever done that. But he was helped with Ronald Reagan. And we want to think of that. That was a fulfillment of prophecy. Very definite. We see now a new man. And this man is working on the religious bodies. And we're seeing the collapse of Protestantism as a result of this, a union between the bodies of Protestantism. You've heard just on the October the 21st, I think it was the 21st, the Lutheran Church in Europe has conceded that they were at fault, and the Reformation or the rift between them is now finished. Now that's just a start, because he's going to already. He's Tony Palmer, one of his envoys, is working with the Pentecostal churches of America to bring them into line and accept. But you know, we're both Christian, we're both evangelical. And so on. And a number of evangelical churches are taking the bait. This is happening. We are starting to see where this beast the wound starts to be healed very definitely. We're seeing that. It's just the start. And it can happen very quickly. Now, it doesn't mean to say that Francis is going to get his way in everything. Because already he has problems with the European Union about climate change. They've accepted most of those things, but he has put in place something that we need to bear in mind, that is going to be very important. You've had it in your article here. Sorry, I'll get it out again. And it's interesting that I saw this, because I wouldn't have registered it before. Sorry, this one about European. This John Paul issued a decretal, or whatever you call it, in the 1990s, about one day in seven rest day throughout Europe. He had nothing to hang it on, and the nations of Europe dismissed it. This new man has got something to work on. Climate change. Climate change. If you reduce working one day a week, you reduce climate emissions by at least 15%. Can you see the effect? And a lot of nations, in fact 192 nations at the present time, have signed that agreement to follow these tougher and tougher emissions strategies to stop climating. This is going to be something that we should be watching carefully. At the moment, Francis has not succeeded with the European nations about bringing in refugees. They said there's so many right-wing movements within Europe to say we will not have any Muslims in our country, we've had enough of them, etc. We don't want them. And it's pretty sad in one sense, because they are human beings and they're suffering terribly in some of these places, but they're basically resenting the having these people. And so when we don't find, actually, most of these refugees coming from Africa and whatnot, they've suffered under these regimes because we've got rid of their leaders who were cruel but held them in check. Now they've got all the radicals and idiots under the sun trying to control the countries, and the people are moving out in droves. And unfortunately, they are human beings. But because of their religious background and some other issues about the economies of these countries to keep on having these people, they can't do it. And so far, a lot of that, you'll notice Italy is taking most of them. Isn't it interesting? When I was over in Italy 2 years ago, it was interesting. Even there, you could see all these refugees trying to sell you this and walking around the streets in so many of the cities there. It's sad. But at the same time, these other issues are starting to come to the fore. Now, so that first beast is very significant. When you come to dealing with some other issues, when we come to the very last end, these powers all come into play. All of them. They all have issues. You'll see the decline or the finish of this. Instead of a secular society, we'll have a society absolutely fixated on religion. You know what that is about. Next, Revelation 13, the second beast. That's the third beast, actually, I think I forgot. Yeah, or two, or three. I'm getting mixed up on how many beasts I've got now. And that was the, when I put that picture, the, might have had it there. No, as I say, it's like a, it's not like a dog's breakfast, but it sometimes feels like it. Yeah, yeah. Not that one. This is the next beast. Revelation 13, you know what that one is, and you've seen by the animal, you know exactly what it should be. Okay? All right? This is none other than the US, the United States. But when you read that, it almost beggars belief to think what is said here in Revelation 13 from verses 12 onwards, 11 onwards, that this could happen in that country, which is the nation of the separation of church and state. It's First Amendment. It's a very important one. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. That is the simple statement that was made by Thomas Jefferson to make sure that church and state are not united. Now, we're starting to see a few cracks in the wall sometimes. It's still future, the land of liberty. But there were certain influences that were surprising. In 2004, I might have mentioned this before. I'll put two. Okay. Okay. Certain things that were interesting in 2004. In 2000, there was a dubious election of George Bush, the Republican Party candidate. There was a lot of questions about whether he deserved to be elected, you know, over Florida election, just like there's questions about the present one, though this was pretty obvious. Okay, he went then, and he went into Iraq. He went into dealing with Afghanistan, and then he made the fatal mistake of getting into Iraq. And the war was going badly. In 2004, he had the next election. A lot of secularists, a lot of Democrats did not think he was going to make it against John Kerry. But what did it have in our papers when it came to the election? George Bush won that election by the influence of the evangelical religious right in America. Interesting. It was interesting. That's, what, 12, 14 years ago. But it tells you something. You'll find that this, because so many of these evangelicals, in fact, the present election, 81% of evangelicals voted for Donald Trump. He is now seeking to reward them. And in fact, if you look in Google and look at the title called the Trump Card, look at that. Our own man, Walter Vaith, will give you 53 minutes of some very sobering things to think about what that means, of the support that is going to be given to Protestants, in the evangelical Protestants in the United States by this Trump. It's rather interesting. And it's mostly to do with religion. It's mostly to do with helping these people because he said that they've done so much for the country. And many of these people are futurists, etc., do not realize what danger that they are facing if they make the next step of turning away from religious liberty. That is going to happen. We know it's going to happen. We don't know exactly how it's going to happen. But when we read Great Controversy, we should know very quickly some of the factors that are involved. And I'm just forgetting my notes and going on to this. We know that one of the factors is going to be climate change because of the disasters that are affecting America. Not so much the rest of the world, but America. Natural disasters. And they're coming thick and fast. And they're costing billions. The other factors, of course, are the influence of Protestant churches and the unity between Protestantism and Catholicism, and all that article there about supporting Catholics in the United States. Rather interesting. Rather interesting. And Francis has been doing his best to unite East and West. Oh, no, I shouldn't say East and West. It's West and West. West and West Europe. Yeah, plus East and West. And we see this sort of thing. How quickly that happens, and it could be told that the last movements will be rapid ones. Now, the one that we know is the main thing that we have to look for is the thing that happens in the United States will be about Sunday laws. And again, in America, starts to be this feeling about bringing in one day a week. I don't know how Trump will take that at the moment because he wants to make America great. It sort of might be a bit of conflict. He's put himself to fulfill a lot of expectations. He may not be able to do so, but it would be interesting to see what had happened. So if you do anything, look on the news on SBS. You'll get more information from that than any of the other channels. All we get on our commercial channels here in Australia, oh, somebody robbed this bloke and somebody bashed into that car. Almost irrelevant stuff. With this SBS, you'll get something about what's happening in the world, Europe and America. Rather more interesting, more important. And it will deal with some of these issues some of the time. Okay. Now, and you go to the last part. So we've got beast, one, I'm missing out somewhere, three, oh, anyway, doesn't matter. The dragon. That's what I forgot. The dragon. All right. Mentions about the dragon. If you turn over to Revelation 16. I'm well over time, am I? Revelation 16 about the seven last plagues, verse 13. Rather interesting. Look, the whole chapter is interesting because when you look at it realistically, it's frightening. Then I saw three evil spirits that looked like frogs. They came out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. They are the spirits of demons performing miraculous signs, and they will go out to the kings of the world to gather them for the battle on the great day of God Almighty. Now, many people get this a bit wrong about the three spirits, or the spirits of devils, etc. Now, obviously, that refers to spiritualism, but to notice the powers that it deals with, the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet, sort of almost contradictory. Okay, if we look at that carefully, all right, the false prophet is that one. I won't go into explaining it. That is apostatism in Protestantism. This one is the first beast. Then what is about the dragon? What happens to the dragon? Now, have a look at this again. Here's the woman. When can she do anything, or when can she persecute, when can she have power? What does she need? She needs one of the heads. She needs the beast. What is the beast, or the dragon, if I find it again. Revelation 12. There was the dragon attacking who? The first church, and this was where Jesus was going to be born. That dragon represented pagan Rome at the time. It's any power that the religious power can use to do its bidding. And the dragon then refers to no other than world governments. Not spiritualism. Spiritualism is the form by which they are drawn to deceived to follow that pathway. So it's rather interesting. We are living in troublesome times, and I hate to actually, in fact it's a great sermon to actually have somebody who's good at words and perhaps even pictures to actually picture what happens in the next few moments of Earth's history and the close of probation and what it's going to be like after the close of probation and what it happens through those events, what it will be like for both God's people and those who reject, what it will be like. And then, thankfully, the best thing of all, second coming. Now, none of us like to go through trial. I'll have to use better paper that way. None of us like to go through trials. But this is the only thing, that's the only thing that disappoints me about the future. I'm looking for this, but I don't want to go through any suffering to do for it, you know what I mean? But it's going to happen if I'm alive. I might not be. I might die. I might suddenly cark it, you know. No, but you don't know those things, but that's going to happen. And we are living in such times that we see these things and we need to be aware of them and we need to watch the news and any items that are worthwhile. And if somebody says to you, look up this that you know the source is good, look at it and see what it tells you. And I'm more afraid for younger generation who have never had to live in they've always lived in a secular world, but we who are older like me can remember the days when there was Catholic, Protestant, you know, and all this sort of thing, and religion was much more of an issue than it is today. But we're going to see that arise again, and the restrictions that it's going to bring is going to be much harder. And as it says there in Revelation 13, they'll neither be able to buy nor sell. Now, can you imagine what that's going to be like? That is where God promises. And I can remember Mark Finley did a service on this about the last end of time, and he was at pains to try and say to those who are listening that despite the fact that they will go through that time of trouble, God is there and he's guaranteed himself that he will protect his people. He won't protect the others, but he will protect his people through that time that's coming. Unfortunately, it won't be a very long time. And let me say this, and I've thought of this illustration. If I could say this to you, and if I could get it imprinted in my mind, if I had a piece of string, it was 10 centimetres long, and each centimetre represented 10 years of your life, okay, however long you live, and you've got that, and you might be like me, I'm 76 now, so I'm over 7.5 centimetres, okay, and you might be in your 30s, you might be in your 40s, you might be in your 50s, you might be in 70s, 60s, whatever, and you represent that, you're in that. Now, I want you to imagine also that there is a golden thread, beautiful golden thread, that goes from here right through to Sydney, to Brisbane, beyond Brisbane, even across the Pacific to the United States, to New York, just as an example. Golden thread, that long, goes into umpteen thousands of kilometres. Now, wouldn't you be a fool if you put all your emphasis on living in that part of that piece of string? And this is what so many people do. They live for this life alone, and that's all they'll get. Whereas we are offered something that will go for billions of years. And we just do not appreciate how much that gift really is, that God is going to give to us, if we're faithful to him, something that's going to last for eternity. And it's not going to be you're just going plucking harps or playing a banjo or whatever, and that'd be absolutely boring. You know what I mean? Because God has got something so wonderful. Read Great Controversy, the last few pages. It gives you an idea of what heaven is going to be like. It's worthwhile. It's worthwhile reading. And we would be fools, and so many people are going to make this dreadful mistake that when it comes, when, as I said, that sermon I took several months ago, the second coming of Christ will come upon the world as an overwhelming surprise. They won't expect it, but their life will finish then. That'll be it. They get no more. Nothing. And they'll realize what they've missed out on. Yeah. Anyway, I think I've said too much. Thank you for listening. I didn't take much space on that, did I? Thank you. Bye.